Hello, and welcome to our program, National Geographics, brought to you by OWL Radio and Low Vision Resource Center. I am Karen Stokes with Dave Stokes, and during the next half hour, we will be reading articles from National Geographics here on OWL Radio.
Our first article is from National Geographic of January 19, 2024. The headline is, Why Your Dog Helps You Relax More Than Your Friends Do. Psychologists explain the reason why dogs, even though they can't talk, can lower your anxiety and improve your mood better than a human can. And the cover of the little photograph here shows a man carrying a dog inside his coat at sub-zero temperature on a pedestrian street in Beryozov, Russia. Mounting evidence shows that dogs are better at helping you through stressful times than other human beings are. If you've ever noticed that you feel more relaxed around your beloved pooch when you're under pressure than you do with your partner or a friend, you're in good company. A mounting body of research has found that when your dog owners are faced with stressful situations, their bodies tend to be less physiologically reactive when their pets are present. The unconditional support people get from their pups has a psychological impact and a physiological basis. In recent years, multiple studies have illustrated the many ways people's dogs can provide comfort, calm their frazzled nerves, be good listeners, and provide other forms of valuable support, proving that sometimes words are simply not necessary. Quote, our dog companions are very predictable and reliable. The unconditional love we get from our dogs gives us a sense of security, says Evangeline Wheeler, a professor of psychology at Towson University in Maryland. She goes on to say, dogs don't judge you or criticize. They just sit there and look at you with loving eyes. This silent form of canine encouragement can have a calming effect when you're anxious or under pressure, sometimes more than the presence of a human friend or partner does. Now, canine versus human support. When people are placed in situations where they are asked to perform mental arithmetic or endure a cold pressor test in which their hand is submerged in ice water, those who had their dog present had smaller increases in their blood pressure and heart rate than those who had a spouse or friend present, according to research in psychosomatic medicine. More recently, a study in 2023 issue of the journal Emotion had people engage in a stress-inducing task involving adding numbers that flashed on a computer screen, then interact with their pet dog, color in a coloring book, or wait quietly for 10 minutes. Those who interacted with their pooches experienced a greater boost in mood and a greater reduction in anxiety than those who simply waited or tried to de-stress by coloring. Quote, your dog is providing non-judgmental social support. You know your dog isn't judging you for stressing out or being a wimp, close quote, says study co-author Hannah Rila, a psychologist and assistant teaching professor of psychology at UC Santa Cruz. She says, if your dog is sitting there wagging its tail, you could catch positive emotions from the dog, close quote. Similarly, in a study in the journal Society and Animals, researchers had 223 people undergo the Trier Social Stress Test, known as the TSST, which requires participants to make a presentation and subsequently take an unanticipated mental arithmetic test in front of a panel of people who don't provide feedback or encouragement. When people performed the TSST in the presence of a companion dog, they had lower stress levels as measured by blood pressure and heart rate and less anxiety. In terms of how dogs can provide their humans with a level of comfort that other people can't, quote, there's a raw honesty you can have with your dog that you can't always have with other people, says Lori Kogan, a counseling psychologist and a professor in the clinical sciences department at Colorado State University. We accept them so completely as they are, and they do the same for us, and they're consistent with it, she says, close quote. The benefits of talking to Fido. It's common for people to chat with their dogs throughout the day about what each other is doing or how cute or playful or mischievous the pup is. It's a gentle reminder of what's meaningful when you talk to your dog. You get a sense of this is why you're here. No matter what happens at work or with your finances, your dog still loves you and needs you, and that gives you a sense of purpose, says Larry Young, an expert on the neuroscience of social bonding and a professor of psychiatry at Emory University. Research has found that talking to your dog about emotionally fraught items can be particularly beneficial. In a study in the 2018 issue of Anthrozeus, researchers found that people are more willing to confide in their dogs about difficult emotions, such as depression, jealousy, anxiety, apathy, and fear, than they are with their romantic partners or friends. The precise reason for this isn't known, but one hypothesis is that pets are, quote, pets are good, non-judgmental listeners because they don't interrupt or reply, close quote, says study co-author Daniel Mills, a specialist in human-animal relationships and a professor of veterinary behavior, and a professor of veterinary behavioral medicine at the University of Lincoln in the United Kingdom. A dog won't try to fix the problem the way some people do, he says. There's value in simply expressing emotions, especially troublesome ones. Research has found that when people put their emotions into words, their negative feelings become less intense, both subjectively and neurologically. By calming the response of the amygdala, which is responsible for processing fear, anxiety, and other intense emotions. Your relationship with your dog is a safe space because your dog won't judge you or disagree with you. Humans, quote, humans have a need to talk, and articulating how you're feeling is quite important in resolving your feelings, close quote, Mills says. By verbalizing it, you can start to make sense of it, as opposed to having it float around in your head. Expressing those feelings helps you move on from the past and into the future. There's a liberation that comes from it, they said. Another hidden perk, your dog isn't going to engage in a conversation about what's bothering you, which could lead you to ruminate about it. They're more likely to distract you. Dogs use emotionally manipulative strategies, Mills says. Their desire to play is incompatible with your being subdued or angry. When you're interacting, you can get both a surge of oxytocin, often called the love hormone or the cuddle hormone, which decreases the stress response in the short term, Young says. Further support for this phenomenon comes from a study in 2022 in the issue of International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health. They found that when people interact with dogs while teleworking, it replenishes the human self-regulatory responses by engaging in micro breaks to their pet pup. The people are able to relax and rejuvenate in ways that interacting with unfurry family members doesn't. Quote, dogs are fantastic at reading us. They can sense when we're upset, and they are arguably better at reading us than some people are, says Kogan. And because we intuit that our dogs read us so well, we regulate ourselves so as not to upset our dogs, which is helpful for us as well. Close quote. It's a positive feedback loop. And the editor's note for this, Stacy Colino is the co-author of the book, The Purest Bond, Understanding Human-Canine Connection. She was not involved with the research in discussing this article, however. And that's the end of the article on how dogs can make you feel better.
Okay, next. Lifting heavy weights can help you mitigate osteoporosis. Here's how to get started. In 2012, my Aunt Suzanne Stewart Jones, then in her late 50s, was diagnosed with osteoporosis. Finding that worried her. Her mother also suffered from the disease and had been an independent and adventurous world traveler, dancing in Morocco on her 80th birthday. But after breaking her hip, she was confined to bed and a wheelchair and never recovered. Stuart Jones's grandmother also likely had osteosclerosis, acquiring the nickname Little Nana because she shrank so much in her later years, a classic manifestation of bone weakening disease. To strengthen her bones, Stuart Jones, who lives in Sydney, Australia, followed mainstream advice to do exercise like yoga, walking, and other lightweight bearing activities. But it wasn't enough. In early 2022, a DXA scan, the standard test to measure bone density, revealed a fracture in one of her vertebrae. "I'm thinking I'm crumbling," Stuart Jones told her psychotherapist, who recommended a new and completely different strategy. He prescribed lifting heavy weights based on recent trials that showed women with osteosclerosis could gain bone this way. After getting the okay from her doctor, she started. For decades, the conventional advice for osteosclerosis was to engage in gentle exercises, but nothing too stressful. Quote, "Everybody had decided the way to manage osteosclerosis with exercise was just to stop falling," unquote, says Becky Belinda, the professor of Griffith University in Australia, who has studied bone health for more than 20 years. Balance and stability exercises were prioritized with a focus on preventing falls, but that kind of exercise doesn't build new bones. Most of the literature shows that maintaining physical activity will stabilize bone mineral density, if not necessarily improve it, says Kendall Mosley, a physician and clinical director for the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes, and Metabolism at Johns Hopkins Medicine. Beck saw patients with low bone density become, quote, terrified to do anything because they're going to break. So their life kind of closes in around them because they stop being active. They can't lift up their grandchildren. They can't do things in the garden anymore, unquote, says Beck. Beck knew that even as we age, bone is responsive to exercise, and the basic principles of building bone are the same over lifetime. Bone bends when you load it. The lightweight exercise doesn't bend it much, whereas heavier weights do. That's because although bone appears solid, it contains tiny holes that are connected via channels. When the bone bends, the fluid in the channels moves from compressed side of the bone to the other side and pushes past the osteocytes, the stress sensors, and fires them up. This sends a signal to the osteoblast to build more bone, says Beck. This very cooling sensing system in the bone is also the mechanism by which a broken bone heals. In those with low bone density, the key is ensuring that the loading is heavy enough to build bone slowly over time, but not so heavy that it breaks bones. Challenging the norms of who lifts heavy. In 2013, Beck began a new study to measure the benefits of high-intensity resistance and impact training, quote, "which is what I knew bone needed to adapt," unquote. She recruited 101 people over the age of 65 with low to very low bone mass, almost half diagnosed with osteosclerosis based on their DXA scan scores. The randomized control trial included two groups. One did low-intensity supervised exercise, a protocol recommended by most doctors. The other group did heavier supervised weightlifting. From prior studies, they knew that the bone remineralization takes at least 8 months, so that was the length of the study. The results showed that those in the heavy weightlifting group had significant increases in the density of the bones in their spines, while the low-intensity program participants continued to lose bone, clearly showing low-intensity doesn't work to build bone. High-intensity does. And okay, the study's very promising. The other physical criteria linked to decreased fracture risk also improved compared to the control group. The result, lifting heavy weights reduced the risk of falling in addition to building backbone. Beck formalized the protocol used in her clinic study, defining heavy weights as 85% of the maximum weight a patient can lift, which should increase over time. Since then, she has certified trainers in her program in 8 countries, with practitioners reporting their results back to Beck. There are also independent physical therapists who are using Beck's work as a fit basis for their own programs. In New Jersey, Claudia Tomas, a doctor of physical therapy and director of women's health at National Medicine and Rehabilitation, received certification in Beck's protocol and then worked with a group of women with osteosclerosis for a year. When she compared before and after DXA scans, she found results consistent with Beck's. Additional studies also supported Beck's finding. Lifting heavy weights is for middle-aged women too. Bone loss begins early, and there are several genes that are linked to the likelihood of osteosclerosis. But lifestyle matters too. Women's bone mass is greatest at around 35 years old. But due to sedentary lifestyles in modern cultures, that peak might be quite low compared to cultures with women doing physical labor. That's because building muscle builds bone, according to Tamas. Conversely, muscle weakness and muscle loss is also going to be accompanied by bone loss. Tamas says she's seen muscle weakness in women as long as their early 40s, but the decline is not inevitable. Quote, ideally, you should start weight trainings in your 30s so you can maximize that peak in bone density. In both men and women, bone density declines about 1% a year after age 35, but at menopause, it declines at about 10% in a short period of time for women. Tamas points out that if you start at a higher bone density, losing some at menopause might not be a problem, but thinner bones from the get-go mean when menopause comes, you're already at the edge of the cliff. There's always a time to build back bone. The great news is that almost anyone at any stage of life can build bone back through weightlifting programs, but this is an intensive long-term exercise plan that must be done with supervision. The challenge is obviously in access to know what to do and how to do it and how to do it safely. Not everyone would be able to physically complete the exercises. Bone loss isn't just caused by age, but by anything that causes chronic inflammation, as well as liver disease, kidney disease, organ transplant, and drugs taken for those issues that cause bone breakdown, like steroids. Still, Tomas says even one of her patients with an autoimmune disease is now maintaining bone. Previously, the patient had lost 5% a year. Almost 20% of the women older than 50 will become osteoporotic. That number is increasing, and half of them will suffer a broken bone due to low bone mass. People will go to the doctor, and the doctor will say, oh, you've only got osteopenia. You don't need to worry, but actually that's not true at all. You're definitely at risk of fracture if you have osteopenia, says Beck. Breaking bones, doing normal life activities is a sign of a risk. Falling from standing height and breaking something, that shouldn't really happen. Stuart Jones is now finishing up her first year of weightlifting at age 69, and she's able to deadlift 125 pounds. Of course, she's hoping her bone mineral scan will show a bone density increase, but she's also come to love weightlifting for the many other benefits. Besides losing 15 pounds, she gained muscle, reshaped her body, and her posture is noticeably straighter. Her confidence has improved along with her growth strength, and something Tomas and Beck also noted with groups of people they trained. Lifting planted pots, putting laundry on top shelf, and moving boxes during a recent move were all surprisingly easy. I kept thinking, oh, that might be a bit heavy, and then realizing, oh, it's not heavy at all.
Okay, our next item has to do with the upcoming total eclipse of the sun. The light sound is a device from Harvard University Astronomy Lab allows users to hear the stages of a total solar eclipse. This article by Stephanie Vermilion, published January 26, 2024 in National Geographic. On April the 8th, 2024, North American sky gazers will experience one of the decade's most buzzed about interstellar events, a total solar eclipse. During this event, the moon will slide between the Earth and the sun, turning day into eerie dusk along a roughly 100-mile-wide ribbon of North America known as the Path of Totality, casting a shadow from Mazatlan, Mexico, to Canada's Maritime Provinces. The eclipse is predicted to be among the most watched of all time. In the United States alone, over 31 million people reside along the Path of Totality, which spans 13 states from our own Texas all the way to Maine. As many as 3 million may travel to watch it. And for the first time on a large scale, people with visual impairments will be able to experience it too, by listening. A team at the Harvard University Astronomy Lab has developed Light Sound, a smartphone-sized device that translates ambient brightness into sound. The piping of a flute represents bright sunshine, while a clarinet indicates the eclipse's gradual dimming effect. Soft clicks mark the fleeting few minutes of totality. That's when the moon completely blocks all of the sun's fiery outer atmosphere, known as the corona. These quiet sounds are designed to complement, not detract from, the multisensory event. Quote, if you want to experience your surroundings, says Harvard astronomer, lab manager, and eclipse chaser Allison Birla, during totality, observers can feel the temperature drop. Some may hear unexpected creatures such as owls or crickets, not to mention emotional crowd reactions. End quote. Some people start cheering, others are crying, says Birla. Light sound, this is how you listen. Light sound began to be developed before the 2017 total solar eclipse. It really struck me that we weren't including everyone in eclipse events, said Birla. She teamed up with a blind astronomer, Wanda Diaz Merced, who pioneered the use of sonification, turning data into sound, for analyzing data sets such as gamma ray bursts. The team started with three devices for the 2017 eclipse. Then they brought on student Soleil Hyman, who's also a musician, to redesign the device and its sounds ahead of this year's show. The Harvard University Astronomy Lab plans to build and disseminate more than 700 light sound units to institutions holding eclipse events, such as colleges, museums, national and state parks, and schools for the blind. Locations can be found on the Light Sound map. Anyone hosting an eclipse event can request devices at no cost. People are also welcome to make their own. Light sound comes with a built-in instruction, but the device and its code are open source. Those with soldering skills can follow the lab's instructions to create their own units and customized sounds. Well, I don't know if I'll be doing that, but it sounds interesting. Anyway, Birla says the lab's goal is to open astronomy to more people. She says, quote, "This device isn't just for the blind or low vision person. It could also be a tool for a person that engages with data differently." So, making astronomy accessible. Astronomy has long centered on sight, said Kimberly Arcand, visualization scientist at the Harvard and Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. She continues, "It dates back to the earliest days of humans looking up. It's a bias we've had just because of humanity's evolution. That's slowly changing," close quote. In the past decades, technologies like sonification have made astronomy more inclusive, while simultaneously enhancing scientists' understanding of the universe. Arcand and the team at NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory spearheaded a major initiative to sonify astronomical data such as wavelengths of light to better engage the public with wonders like the Crab Nebula, which is the remnant of a supernova explosion. And quoting, "If I listen to a sonification of a data set, it will tell me slightly different story than if I'm just looking," says Arcand. Research suggests this approach could more effectively teach those who are neurodivergent or have dyslexia or autism. According to Mike Simmons of Astro for Equality, a nonprofit that spearheads astronomy programs in marginalized and underserved communities, scientists have created numerous accessible teaching aids beyond sound, from Braille books about the moon and eclipses to tactile globes educating the blind and low vision community about constellation and stars. The challenge is to increase awareness and distribution of these tools. We need to get these resources used, says Simmons. That's where the large-scale production and distribution of light sound devices could play a role beyond eclipse day. Light sound doesn't solve the issue of access for everyone, says Birla, but it does in a small way provide a simple tool that promotes the inclusion of a very underrepresented group.
Thank you. You have been listening to National Geographic on OWL Radio. You can listen to OWL Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Karen Stokes.
And I'm Dave Stokes.
Saying goodbye from OWL Radio. Have a good day.